When you read about the political history of Illinois, you often see the word corruption. For instance, from January 1961 until January 2009, Illinois citizens elected eight different men to be their governors. Four of those eventually went to prison, all convicted after they were out of office. Robert E. Hartley has written 11 books about the politicians of Illinois, including one titled Power, Purpose, and Prison. Mr. Hartley writes that these men met their downfall under different circumstances. He asks, where did they go wrong? And were they able to recover self-respect in spite of their punishment?
We assume you're here because you enjoy listening to C-SPAN's podcasts. If you're a regular listener, please consider supporting our nonprofit operation so we can continue to bring you quality public affairs podcasts like these. Visit cspan.org/donate to learn more.
Robert Hartley, why did you call your book Power, Purpose, and Prison when you were writing about Illinois governors?
Well, I thought that covered most of the governors in some way or another. From about 1940 up to the book covered up to about 2003. And I just felt that if you looked at all of those governors during that time, they fit into those three categories pretty well.
Because I'm going to ask you a lot about the ones that went to prison, let me start by, though, asking you, who of all the governors you wrote about you think was the most successful?
Oh, I think Jim Thompson was. He served 14 years. Politically, he certainly was successful. And I think his terms as governor were successful as well. There were some other good governors, but I think Thompson pretty much stands above them all.
What makes a good governor from your experience?
Well, I think someone who can operate politically and can get policy issues passed, working with, as Thompson did, with a Democratic legislature most of his time, he was able to get quite a few things through. In fact, they always said that he was elected as a Republican and he operated as a Democrat because he was able to cross the line and get things done.
So how many books have you written about Illinois politics?
12.
Why?
Well, I'm addicted to Illinois politics. It started when I was working in the newspaper business in Illinois, and I became fascinated by it and had interaction with a number of politicians, and sort of one thing led to another. I had a mentor who helped me greatly, Bob Howard, who was a longtime reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and he wrote a couple of big books as well, and he encouraged me to write books.
Where did you work in Illinois?
I worked in East St. Louis. I worked for the same organization all the time I was in the newspaper business, and I started on the newspaper in East St. Louis, and then moved to Decatur, which was the home office of the organization. And I ran the newspapers there morning and evening, and then later became a corporate editor for that company.
How many of your books have been self-published?
I self-published three.
And then who published the rest?
The Southern Illinois University Press for most of them.
So what is, as a journalist, as a writer, what's your objective?
I hope to tell stories of history that I think have been overlooked or will not be covered by other people. And so I would think I was always driven by a mission to write about Illinois politics in a balanced manner. Even though I knew a lot of these people, Democrats and Republicans as well, And so I think that was my mission, and that was why that is what has driven me, looking for areas of politics in Illinois that has either been ignored or nobody cares about.
Describe Illinois for somebody that's never been there.
Well, Illinois is a big state, and I lived there for 17 years. It's an agricultural state, downstate for the most part, industrial as well. Of course, there's Chicago and all of the politics that comes out of Chicago, it has a tremendous overall a tremendous history. So that it doesn't take much to get engrossed in the history. I just branched it out into politics. It was a great place to live and to work when I was there.
Where are you now?
I live in Winfield, Kansas, where I have retired after living in Toledo, Ohio, and Washington State, and Colorado, and Arizona, and I ended up back here where I am a native of Winfield.
How corrupt is Illinois politics?
Well, it is a part of Illinois politics to the bone, and it goes back far beyond anything that I have done research on. I started my research on their politics in 1936-34, and followed it then from that point on. And everywhere I turned, every governor who served, with a few exceptions, had got in trouble some way with their governing or with their personal lives. And into several, five of those governors in that time period, ended up in prison. There was one who was accused of avoiding evading taxes, and he was acquitted. And there was one governor who was accused of a lot of things by the press and in a campaign, but was never prosecuted. So it stretches from about 1940 all the way to 2009.
I'm old enough to remember a big name as I was growing up, Otto Kerner, governor from 61 to 68. Why did he go to prison?
Otto Kerner was a governor during a period in which, in Chicago particularly, racetracks were big business, and he was governing with the blessing of Mayor Daley at the time, and during his service, he was approached through intermediaries. He was approached to buy some stock in a racing track operation run by Marge Everett, was her name. And she was a big deal in horse racing in Chicago. And she offered him stock in her company at what turned out to be a ridiculously low price. A proposal. She wanted something from Kerner, and so it was a pay for play, and the deal was that he could sell the stock back to her for a profit, significant profit, but she wanted some help from him. For example, the state of Illinois controlled the dates of racetracking, and they were set by the administration. And she wanted some favorable dates from Kerner, and she also wanted some legislation that helped her profits, and he did that. And he, with help from friends in the administration, He bought the stock. He sold it back to her, made a profit of about $150,000, which today doesn't sound much, but in the 1960s, it was a lot of money. And so then the federal government was conducting an investigation of horse racing in Illinois. And throughout that investigation, they discovered this transaction.
I'm going to come back to these governors, but I want to go through them and get the brief explanation on why they went to prison. Why did Dan Walker, who was governor from 1973 to 77, go to prison?
He did not go to prison for anything that happened during his governorship. All this happened after he was governor, and he enjoyed the high life and living the high life after he was governor. And he and his wife were very socially active in Chicago. He tried practicing law, and that didn't work out. And then he went into businesses, a couple of businesses that made some big money for him, and took some of that money and bought his way into a savings and loan in the suburbs of Chicago. And then he was running the savings and loan. And it was during that time and during the manipulation of money that was flowing from loans to the savings and loan, everything was getting in trouble in that time of the history when savings and loans ran into trouble. And he began manipulating the resources that he had for personal use. And the federal government, of course, controlling and regulating savings and loans, were looking into those activities that he undertook. And they charged him, took him and indicted him for a number of charges. And then he did not go to a trial. Pleaded guilty on the advice of his attorney, and he thought he was going to get probation at the worst, and he ended up with a sentence of 6 years in prison.
Why did George Ryan? Now, Kerner and Walker were Democrats. Ryan was a Republican. Why did he go to prison?
He had a history in state government as a deal maker. He started out in the legislature in the House of Representatives prior to 1980. He became a speaker for 2 years in the 80s. Then he and Jim Thompson teamed up, and he joined Thompson as lieutenant governor, and he had a free hand to cut deals. He liked people, and he didn't want to make anybody mad, and he couldn't say no. And soon he was named, and Thompson helped him get to be Secretary of State. And that's where he met his downfall. And he ended up with payoffs. He ended up with money, campaign money. He ended up creating a corrupt operation or permitting it around him with a bunch of people that were friends of his that he brought into the administration. He ran for governor in 1998, and it was beginning to catch up with him then. There was an investigation going on into the time he was Secretary of State, in which the feds were looking at how truck drivers' licensing was being manipulated, and there were payoffs involved in that. And while it didn't directly hit Ryan at that time, it was going on around all over him. And the government, I think, felt that he could not have been Secretary of State or governor and not known about it and what was going on. He was elected in 98, and he already the rumors were flying that there were investigations and he was in trouble, but he was elected and he served one term. But before that term was over, they had brought in with the new administration in D.C. They brought in a new U.S. attorney in Chicago, who was a most aggressive man, and he picked up on this on what Ryan had been doing. And the first thing you knew, he was indicted by a federal grand jury, and he went to trial. Of course, he denied anything illegal. He didn't argue about doing some manipulation or some deals, but he contended that he didn't do anything illegal. But he was convicted and sentenced to 6.5 years in prison.
Rod Blagojevich was the governor January 2003 until January 2009. You don't write a lot about him in the book, but why did he go to prison?
Well, first of all, during his time as governor, the legislature impeached him and convicted him. And then there was a federal investigation of corrupt practices, and he was charged with that. And so he lost the job as governor by being impeached and convicted. And then he went to prison for the corrupt activities.
How much did he get involved in the whole selling of supposedly of the Senate seat when Barack Obama became president?
Well, he wanted to do that. I don't think he ever succeeded in selling anything, but he was always trying to manipulate his own business, getting something for him and for some other people who were friends of his.
Why did Donald Trump commute his sentence?
You know, I don't know. I didn't do a lot of research on Blagojevich because that wasn't for the book, and I couldn't answer that question. I don't know why. I think he felt that Blagojevich had served enough time.
An Illinois political figure by the name of Dennis Hastert, he was the Speaker of the House, went to prison. How much about that case do you know?
Not a great deal.
Then there is somebody I'm sure you know about, even though you don't write about him in this book, a guy named Mike Madigan, who was one of the longest serving public officials in a leadership position anywhere in the country, who is going to stand trial next year. Did you have anything to do with him when you were covering Illinois?
I did not, although I watched his takeover of the legislature very carefully, because I was writing about Illinois during the time he was he really started taking over in the early 1980s, and so he had the people that I wrote about, let's say Thompson and Jim Edgar, who followed him as governor. They both dealt with a legislature that was dominated by Democrats. So they had to deal with him in order to get things through. And so he was a factor in looking at the performance of Thompson and Edgar, and I think probably as well with Ryan. So that I couldn't ignore him in terms of that. In their oral histories Thompson and Edgar did, they talked quite a bit about their negotiations with him, as Madigan, in order to get things passed through.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Olly.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
In this book, you start off with this paragraph. While looking through the several published biographies of Illinois governors, I was reminded of vocalist Peggy Lee's iconic song recorded in 1969, Is That All There Is? What were you getting at?
Well, was there something there that nobody knew about or didn't know the details of it? And for example, I wrote one of the first books that I wrote on Illinois politics after I retired from newspaper business was about Paul Powell, who was the master manipulator of the legislature. And I wrote a book about him, and dug into his past, and he had died in 1970, and I wrote the book 20 some years later. But we knew an awful lot about Paul Powell and all of his manipulation and money that he made in payoffs and doing favors, passing legislation. He was a Speaker of the House for three times, and then he was a minority leader, a Democratic minority leader, for six or more times while he was in the legislature. And he ran things. There was just no question about it. But not people didn't know a lot until he died exactly what he had been doing. And I wrote the first book then, and maybe the only book up to this point, about him and what we knew as a result of the investigations of the FBI and Illinois services as well after he had died. And that for me sort of said, okay, if that happened with Powell and his cohorts, what happened with these others? And it was shortly after Powell died that that Ryan entered the legislature and began his series of deal making. So there was a kind of a continuum that went on throughout of that.
The four governors we've been talking about, it's interesting that they all went to different federal prisons. Otto Kerner went to Lexington. Dan Walker went to Duluth, Minnesota. George Ryan ended up in the Terre Haute Federal Prison. Rod Blagojevich in the Inglewood, Colorado Prison. And Denny Hastert in the Rochester, Minnesota prison. He wasn't the governor, but he was the Speaker of the House. Otto Kerner was a big name because of something called the Kerner Commission, and that was known nationwide. What was that all about, and was he? What did the rest of the country think of him at that time?
The president was Lyndon Johnson at that time, and the riots that were making headlines across the country and the West Coast, Detroit, places like that where people were dying, And riots were happening, and the police were involved. And Lyndon Johnson wanted somebody. He was feeling the heat, and he wanted somebody to conduct some investigations and look into what was happening and why it was happening. And he appointed Kerner to do this. And Kerner then prepared a report, which for the most part exonerated any of Lyndon Johnson activities, but he dug into the racial aspect of these riots to a great extent. He was well thought of. In fact, it was shortly after that was published that he was appointed a judge, appellate court judge, by Lyndon Johnson, probably in some way recognizing what Kerner had done.
And his indictment and his sentencing came after being a circuit court judge, or at least during that time. He died at age 67. What impact did the going to prison have on Otto Kerner?
Well, Kerner always thought he was innocent, but you know, many of these people always contended they were innocent. He felt like that he didn't do anything wrong, that the transactions that took place were legal, and he, of course, when he was convicted, he went through all of the appeals, and he won nothing in the appeals. I think he was embittered by what happened, and then he went to prison, and after about 18 months or something, he was diagnosed with cancer, and they released him, and he came back to Chicago and did some charitable things before he died.
What's your sense about it? Was he guilty?
Well, I think that what he did was the transaction was probably not illegal, but the payoff was, did they do these things for Marge Everett for giving him this opportunity? It was the payoff, I think, that cost him.
Dan Walker wrote a book after he was out of prison. He actually lived to be 92, but he wrote a book, and we covered a news conference that he had. And I've got a couple of clips from the news conference, and I want you to reflect on what you're hearing from Dan Walker.
I deserve to go to prison because I violated the law. Yes, is the answer to that question. Yes. Did I deserve to go to prison in the big picture of things, taking into account what's called selective prosecution, or yes, political prosecution? The answer is no. It's very hard, folks, to say those two things. And all I can do is say each one of them and let you, those of you who read this book, make up your own mind as to whether I deserved to go to prison or not, given all of that situation. But please don't call me a grand thief, because I'm not, and I never have been a grand thief.
Any reaction, Mr. Hartley?
Well, of course, I read that book as well, and I knew him at a personal level when he was governor. And that book, I think it's important to know that a lot of the book was devoted to defending not his prison time, but devoted to defending his term as governor and his war that he carried on with Mayor Daley for all of those years, and ended up losing an election because of Daley. And so a lot of that was getting back at things and repeating hurts that he had and bitterness that he had extending from his time as governor. I believe if he didn't just infer it, he may have said it. He felt that the federal prosecution of him for the activities with the savings and loan, he felt that Jim Thompson had some influence in that. There was never any evidence of that. Thompson was governor when that happened. The U.S. attorney in Chicago was a colleague of Thompson when Thompson was U.S. attorney, and I'm sure that Thompson and the U.S. attorney conferred about what was going on, whether he had any influence in all of that is a little hard to, it's impossible to prove at all. But I think that Dan Walker felt that was one of the reasons why he got the more serious outcome from pleading guilty than he deserved.
Let's listen just to one more little clip of his news conference.
I came very close to committing suicide. The loss of freedom is something that well, we talk about fighting and dying for freedom, right? We talk about that all the time. We have ever since our revolution back in 1776, fighting and dying for freedom. When you lose that freedom, particularly for somebody like me, I've always been a kind of a rebel. And you lose that freedom, that's it. And so I said, committing suicide is not seeking death. It's just stepping off into nothing, absolute nothing. And absolute nothing is maybe better than this.
Your reaction?
Well, I think Dan Walker, from the time he went to prison, he felt he was abused in prison. He lost his license to practice law with the conviction. That took away a piece of his life, of his ability to make money, to earn a living. The years after he was in prison were not particularly uplifting. He had a series of jobs that, in fact, one job that he had as a paralegal, he performed rather well in California until they learned about all that had happened with him illegally. And they fired him, and he remarried, and sort of lived his life out in solitude, and I think he lost everything. I think anything that he thought he had gained as a successful businessman, as a governor, and all was lost, and so he was lost. And he kept up the effort to try to get his license back, but he was never able to do that. And I think it was just a pretty depressing period after all of that.
George Ryan, what was his relationship with Big, as we used to call him, Big Jim Thompson, when he was governor? And these guys came up together. What was their relationship as George Ryan ended up going to prison?
Well, they were good friends, and Jim Thompson thought that in the one term that Ryan served, he thought he did a good job as governor. I think that he was responsible for promoting Ryan in as lieutenant governor, as Secretary of State. And even though Secretary of State is a constitutional office in Illinois, and the governor has no control over that, I think they worked together nevertheless, and he certainly supported him when he ran for governor. And then when the prosecutors started after Ryan, Jim Thompson stepped up. First of all, Ryan asked for his help. And Jim Thompson was the head of the of a law firm in Chicago, Winston and Strawn, and he took over the background of the defense for Ryan. He assigned the lawyer to work for to handle the defense, and Thompson. And Ryan ran out of money to pay for legal help. And Thompson, as the CEO of his law firm, simply swallowed all of that cost, probably estimated in the millions of dollars, to defend Ryan as part of, I think, his faith in Ryan and his belief that he was innocent. And then after Ryan was convicted, Thompson got more active in trying to have the results overturned on appeal. So he was a friend, and then when Ryan went to prison, he was still in the background of Ryan's life, and even helped him get settled after Ryan got out of prison. It was amazing, I thought, the time and effort and expense that Thompson provided for a man who he thought was innocent.
George Ryan's still alive, 89 years old. Do you have any idea what his life is like now?
I have no idea at all. As far as I know, there's no discussion of it in the press. I think he simply settled back down and is still living, and never surfaced again in any public way.
You've mentioned Mayor Daley a couple of times. We've got two Mayor Daleys. Which one did you cover the most of the two, the father or the son?
The father.
Did you know him?
I interviewed him once. To my knowledge, I was the only downstate member of the press who ever interviewed him in his office in Chicago. I spent a couple of hours with him, but that was the extent of my awareness of him personally.
What's the difference between living in Chicago and living downstate?
Well, if you're living downstate, in the time that I did, this was still pretty much a Republican, in many ways, a Republican area. There was a balance between the two parties, even though Daley was dominant in the Democratic Party and certainly in Chicago and in the legislature and so on. Nevertheless, you had an opportunity, if you were downstate, to get a picture that included the Republican side of things or the anti-Daley side of things. And then you, of course, knew that you had to work in the reality that Daley was running a lot of things out of Chicago.
Any corruption with either Daley that you saw?
No.
How did they avoid it in a state that it seems to be so corrupt when you go over the details like we've been doing?
Well, I think that, first of all, I think a lot of things that happened that no one paid for, meaning paid for legally, simply was because they were tolerated. I think there was a tolerance for corruption by public officials that permitted a lot of shady activity. And the people who were doing that were smart enough not to cross the line, for the most part, not to cross the line into something that would backfire on them legally. And I think Daley would fit into that rather well. I mean, we know that he controlled a lot of stuff, a lot of politics, a lot of maybe some elections too. Nobody was able to find. They put some of his aides in prison, but they never laid a hand on Daley.
You know, we're talking about Governor Ryan. We did not talk about the fatal crash in 1994, and the reason I bring it up is because I get the impression that that crash is what tipped off somebody about the licenses that he was making money off of when he was Secretary of State. Are you aware of the 1994 crash?
I am, and I think that there was for some reason, and I'm not sure that I know what it was, the federal government, I think it was, first of all, probably the IRS, but at any rate, there because of truck licensing and truck activity, again, is regulated at the federal level to a great extent, even though there's state activity. I think they were brought in thinking that there was something wrong, and that's where the investigation began. was as a result of that horrible accident that occurred. And exactly who it was that started it with the feds, I'm not familiar with. But that was the beginning of the investigations that led to Ryan's conviction.
Rod Blagojevich was impeached by the legislature, and then after that was indicted, and after that went to prison. Did you have anything to do with that administration, or had you left the state by then?
I was not in Illinois at that time. I thought there was an interesting piece of the Blagojevich situation with Jim Thompson. And I think I wrote about that part in the in the Thompson story. After Blagojevich was elected, and he began to run into some difficulty legally, and he could see some problems ahead, he contacted, first of all, he asked Thompson to help him with his with the moving in to the office of governor, and Thompson did that. And then it was he went to Thompson and asked for legal assistance, and so the Winston and Strom firm, again that Thompson was heading, took over conferring and consulting with Blagojevich on his legal problems. Well, after several months of that, Blagojevich quit paying the bills, and Thompson quit doing any help for Blagojevich. Thompson is the intriguing part of a lot of this, is that Thompson simply surfaces in a lot of what we've been talking about, and was never, to my knowledge, accused of any illegal activity or corruption. And neither was the person that followed him was Jim Eager. And so I don't think, I think Thompson is, that's one of the reasons why I think he was such an incredible public servant.
But if you look back over the Kerner, Walker, Ryan Blagojevich situation, or Mike Madigan for that matter, because he was the speaker of the House from 83 to 2021. He was in the Illinois House that long. I'm not sure he was speaker that long. But the point I want to get at is, how did these guys get caught? I mean, they were caught after they were out of office. What trips it, in your opinion?
Well, I think the feds were alerted one way or another. For example, if you take Ryan, for example, there's a biography of him. I didn't write it, but I read it, of course, that infers that the U.S. attorney who was in Chicago during the time of Ryan's work as Secretary of State, and even in the first part of his governorship, sort of turned a back and didn't pay much attention to what was going on in the investigations. Then they brought in this new U.S. attorney with the Bush administration, and he had an entirely different look at this. And he was an aggressive and successfully aggressive U.S. attorney, and he is the one who turned the heat up on Ryan. He also turned the heat up on Blagojevich. And so I think that what you find is that there may have been some investigations going on, but somebody had to take that information and turn it into a case against someone. They obviously, the feds found that with Dan Walker, they found that he had done some things as the head of that savings and loan. But the U.S. attorney had to take something from that. It wasn't just that investigation took place. So there was a U.S. attorney who took after Walker on that. I just think that this was a sort of a process, and it was pretty much the same thing with Kerner. Department of Justice took over the case in Washington. It was pretty touchy taking on a sitting judge as they did with Kerner. But Thompson, he was told by the people in the Nixon administration, he was told, it's your decision whether you're going to prosecute this man or not. And he made the decision. Thompson made the decision to prosecute Kerner.
I should be sure to point out that Mike Madigan has been indicted, not convicted, and hasn't been tried yet. So I want to make sure that I think some of my language implies that he's already been convicted. I want to make sure I make that clear. Let me go back again to Kerner, Walker, Ryan Blagojevich, and for that matter, Dennis Hastert and Mike Madigan. All of these are federal indictments. When they are convicted, they go to federal prison. Where's the local? Where's the Illinois investigators in all this? And these guys became governors, and this stuff happened in some cases before they became governors. Why aren't the state prosecutors more active?
Because they didn't want to be. That's my personal opinion. It was a part of this, a point I made about the tolerance. You didn't rat out your colleagues. You did what you could to protect them, actually. And when the feds then got involved, then the state people could easily back off and leave it up to the feds. But I believe it was part of the system of state government that over all of those years that simply permitted a thought that we're not going to take on this person who served as governor or served in the legislature or anything else. We're not going to prosecute them because we couldn't even prove it, but anything against them. And so when the feds jumped in, then the state people could just simply back off.
From what you know of writing about all these politicians, the ones that went to prison, what's the impact on them? What happens to them as they're in prison and then after prison?
Well, I think their reputation is destroyed. I think whatever they might have accomplished as governor, I think is put on the back shelf. The focus is the fact that they committed crimes and that they went to prison and they served time. And I think that Dan Walker lost his right to practice law. Kerner couldn't do that either. He lost his seat on the appeals court, and so that was their life. That was the life that they lived. That was the height of their prominence, was serving as governor. And whether they were a good governor or not is really not in their minds what this was all about. It was the fact that they were at the top of the heap, and they lost all of that, and they lost it immediately, and there was no recovery.
You have a book out called Obsessed?
Yes, just published this summer.
What's it about?
It's about three U.S. senators from Illinois, all of whom served at approximately the same time in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, all of whom really wanted to be president of the United States. And they were Charles Percy, Adlai Stevenson III, and Paul Simon, Senator Paul Simon. And in some way or another, they pursued the possibility of being president. Now, that's not unusual among public officials. There are probably a lot of people who thought they ought to be president. But Percy did form an exploratory committee, and I think he would have run if it hadn't been for Nixon resigning and Gerald Ford taking over as president. And so it pretty much killed his chances of becoming nominated in 1976. The only one of the three who actually conducted a campaign for president was Paul Simon. In 1987 and 88, he ran for the Democratic nomination, and it was the Iowa caucuses where he finished a close second, but he never recovered from that. But he did conduct a viable campaign that at times was at the top of the polls.
You've been a print journalist for years, ran newspapers. After all of the corruption that you've covered in Illinois and the governors that have gone to prison, the four that we talked about, and for that matter, the Speaker of the House, any impact on the local press there now? I know the press is, you know, weaker than it's ever been, and when it comes to newspapers, on covering people that are running for office more vigorously than they did in the past after you see all these people have been in prison.
Well, I'm not sure that the press has done much with it. I remember Paul Simon, when he was a state senator in 1965, he wrote an article for Harper's Magazine about alleging corruption in the legislature, and he was. He was shunned by the members of the legislature. His ideas for legislation never went anywhere. And he was called Benedict Arnold. And I think that kind of backing up to support their colleagues against accusations is an example. During that time period, with Chicago newspapers especially, ran stories about the corruption they thought about in the legislature particularly, but nobody investigated that to any extent. And the newspapers just wrote about it, and they'd write an editorial complaining about somebody. They would bring it up maybe in a campaign, but not in a way that anyone could take it to the bank. So I think that has prevailed. The press would probably argue with that, but since I was a part of that, I know that it was very difficult to get past the defense system that the public officials put up, So they didn't tip off their colleagues or even their opponents to any extent. And there wasn't much for the press to get a hold of.
So of all the 12 books that you've written, which one was the most popular in sales?
Well, the most popular one actually was one that only touched on politics to a certain extent. I co-authored a book on two coal mine disasters in Illinois, and it involved politics at the highest level of the state, and it also involved Adlai Stevenson's campaign for governor and his terms as governor. And this book outsold any that I published, with one exception, and that is a book that I wrote about the time Lewis and Clark spent in Illinois. That was a self-published book that sold more copies than any book that I published elsewhere.
Before I let you go, I've got to ask you that on the page in your book where it gives all the titles of the books you've written, Chuck Percy, Jim Thompson, Paul Powell, on and on and on, I do not see the name Lincoln.
I wouldn't dare write anything about Lincoln. They would run me out of the country if they. I have no credentials for that at all.
Our guest has been Robert E. Hartley, and the book we've been talking about is Power, Purpose, and Prison, and it's all about the imprisonment and indictments and conviction of four governors from the state of Illinois. We thank you so much for your time, sir.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Book Notes Plus. We want to make sure you know about our latest podcast, Books That Shaped America. It's a companion podcast to our 10-week television series of the same name. We've teamed up with the Library of Congress and selected 10 books from across American history that have had a major impact on our society. Each week, the C-SPAN television program will focus on one of these books and its impact. This companion podcast will give you more background on the book's authors. If you want to learn more about Books That Shaped America, go to our website, c-span.org. The podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts.